It is 26 minutes after the hour. It is a Tuesday, and on Tuesday, we typically look forward to a conversation with Dr. Don Clark, and lo and behold, Don has joined us again this week. From Garden Valley, Texas, Don is a biochemist, a member of the board at Creation Moments, and just a good friend of the station after, what, 12 years, something like that now. How come it took so long for us to get to the book of Daniel?
We are always doing something from science and relating it back to the Bible. So good idea maybe to talk about the Bible from time to time.
I agree. COVID got in the way, and because of your experience in pharmaceuticals and biochemistry, we shifted gears pretty much during all of COVID and got into health and diet and a bunch of things, and now we're back to the Bible. We've learned a whole lot about Genesis from you. And it turns out that that you have some very pointed views and a great presentation on Daniel. And this, I believe, is part 7, or is it part 8? Part 7?
No, it's part 7. Chapter 7 of Daniel. Folks want to kind of follow along, we'll probably do a lot of reading today, because it's Daniel's vision of the four beasts.
This is the part where it gets obscure and hard to figure. I mean, most people, when you say the book of Daniel, probably think of the lion's den, Daniel in the lion's den, or maybe the fiery furnace and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and the fourth figure in the fire, and we get to this point, and there's a break in the timeline, isn't there?
Well, there is. Actually, chapter 7 and chapter 8 go before even chapter 5, which is the fall of Babylon. So Babylon is still the world kingdom at that time. And so the order of the chapters in Daniel aren't chronological.
Mm-hmm. And you got to get used to that sometimes in the Bible. The timeline isn't as important as the subject matter, so don't let it cross you up. Now we covered last week Darius, who was the official from the Persian Empire, who had conquered Babylon in Belshazzar. At that point, expired the handwriting on the wall, the big party, and he died that very night, and Babylon was overrun by the Persians. Now we're back to Belshazzar.
We are back to Belshazzar. And, just to give folks a little bit of the timeline here. So the vision of the four beasts, which is chapter 7, was in 556 B.C. The ram and the he-goat, which we may cover this time or we may cover next time, was in 554 B.C. The Babylon falls in 539 B.C., and then we'll have the vision of the 70 weeks, which is 538 B.C., and then we get the lion's den. So we talked about the lion's den last time. So we have these three visions here that are interdispersed before, two are before the fall of Babylon, but one is after Persia, the Medo-Persian Empire comes and conquers Babylon. So with that, let's just jump in and see what this vision's all about, the four beasts. And so we start off in verse 1. It says, in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon. Now, you remember Belshazzar is his father is actually king.
Nebuchadnezzar's grandson. Belshazzar's
grandson.
Yeah.
Nabonidus was actually the king, but he abdicated that responsibility to his son, and he went off and did other things. So, and then it turns out that Belshazzar, as we saw with the handwriting on the wall, I mean, he throws a big party, and he's kind of a party guy.
It was a short reign, wasn't it?
Very short, yes. So, here we are, but somewhere before that, the handwriting on the wall, and we have this vision, by probably a couple of years, I guess, was what I said. We have this vision that we're going to talk about now.
And this is Daniel's vision. This is
Daniel's.
To him.
Yeah. It's, we had the vision, two visions that or dreams that King Nebuchadnezzar had. And now we're getting into the visions that Daniel himself is having. So God is communicating directly to him now, not through somebody else's visions, but directly to Daniel, as to things yet to come, and at least yet to come for him, for Daniel. And so let's see what the vision says. And so he says he wrote down the dream and told the sum of the matter. And declared Daniel, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea. And four great beasts came out of the sea, different from one another. Now, in this type of analogy that we're delving into, when you hear anything coming out of the sea, that's referring to Gentiles.
Ah, that
anything
a light
coming
goes
from
on.
Land mm-hmm. is Israel.
Well, that probably comes. There's another notion. I want to just do a little insert here. That the west of Israel was considered evil, and it was always behind you. That's why one of the reasons why east was at the top of the map. It seems that everything that hurt Israel in later years now came from the Mediterranean, which was from the west.
From the west.
So, and they were particularly, they were Gentile. They were Philistines and Romans and Greeks. They came from the west. They were Gentiles. So there is a link between the sea or water and Gentiles, but it goes back to Daniel's time.
It does. Yes. And God is consistent, surprisingly, consistent, because when you get to Revelation and you hear about the two beasts, you see where they come from. And those that come from the sea are Gentiles. Interesting.
Hmm.
Anyway, I just wanted to point that out before we get to the beast.
That's important. Beast. It really is.
And it helps you. It gives you a point of reference, because once you learn the code, if you will, God is very consistent with his analogies that he puts forward in these visions, for example, and in Revelation. So I once did a study both of Daniel and Revelation, and the two books tie together quite nicely. Anyway, onward. So the first beast was like a lion and had eagle's wings. Then, as I looked, its wings were plucked off, and it was lifted up from the ground and made to stand on 2 feet like a man. And the mine heart of the man was given to it. So this first beast... Now, these four beasts actually parallel chapter 2 in Daniel, which is King Nebuchadnezzar's first dream of this statue of himself. And you remember the gold.
The statue
head
of the various metals of various
and the
density.
Silver, yeah. And mm-hmm. The iron legs and the 10 toes of iron mixed with clay. This very much parallels that. So this first beast, the lion... is actually talking about Babylon. And a lion with wings was on the Babylonian gate. So if you go into Babylon at that time, you would see a lion with wings on it. And mm-hmm. So this is a direct reference to Babylon. And behold, another beast, the second one, like a bear, it was raised up on one side. It had three ribs in its mouth between its teeth and was told, arise, devour much flesh. Now, of course, a lion is more regal than the bear. So it's this kingdom, the second kingdom, is not as grand as the first kingdom, if you will. So there is a difference between the two kingdoms. But we also know that it's a split kingdom. because this bear is raised up on one side. So one side was higher than the other. And we know that the second kingdom is the Medo-Persian kingdom, with the Persian kingdom being a stronger side than the Medo side of the kingdom. And so it's what's in its teeth? Well, it had, it had these three ribs. Well, the three ribs represent kingdoms in themselves. And these kingdoms were Babylon, Egypt, and Lydia. So we see that God is describing that this kingdom conquered, I mean, it really conquered Babylon, but Egypt was part of that, and Lydia was part of that.
What is Lydia? I'm not familiar with the kingdom of Lydia. Where was that geographically? Do we know?
We have to look that up. Uh-huh. Where is David when we need him?
Yeah.
we'll have to get back to that and look that up. So in the meantime, I mean, Persia, this Medo-Persian Empire, they had 2.5 million, 2.5 million man army. So, this was no small group that they had, and they were going around. And of course, Cyrus was the king at that time when Babylon was overtaken. And so we talked about, that last time.
By the way, just like we've got it here, Lydia was an Iron Age kingdom situated in the west of Asia Minor. That's west of modern-day Turkey. Later, it became an important province of the Achaemenid Empire, and then the Roman Empire. The capital was at Sardis. At some point before 800 BC, the Lydian people achieved some sort of political cohesion and existed as an independent kingdom by the 600 BC. So, yeah, then the timing is perfect here.
Yep. And so, Persia conquered Lydia, and the Medo part of that empire would have been in that region as well. So it's kind of the east of Babylon, if you will, of the kind of, and certainly east of the Middle East. So that makes sense. All right, moving on. Let's talk about the third beast. And after I looked, and behold, another like a leopard with four wings on a bird on its back, like four wings of a bird on its back. And the beast had four heads, and dominion was given to it. So from the statue that we talked about from chapter 2, the third kingdom, of course, was Alexander the Great, the Greek empire that came and conquered the Persians and, that region as well. So we're talking about world kingdoms here. World kingdoms of the known world at that time, which was mainly the Fertile Crescent region, and then it began to expand up into Europe we got
an understanding that the Bible is Hebrew centric. I mean, wherever you are seems like the center of the world. That's what it was for the Hebrews.
Yeah, that's what it
all
was
through that history. So it was from that perspective that we get the Bible,
right? And of course, the Ark landing in the mountains of Ararat, people resettled that area, and that area was the area where the Garden of Eden was as well. So God placed people there from the very beginning, and people kind of stayed in that region until the Tower of Babel, in which case he dispersed them because of the language. Okay. So this fourth, let's talk about this third kingdom then. It was a leopard, and it had four wings. And so what do the four wings represent? The four wings represent the four generals of Alexander the Great. And they will become important because those after Alexander the Great dies, and he didn't live very long. He was a young man. He was a a beautiful, not necessarily a beautiful, but a very good,
charismatic,
militaristic, leader. Mm-hmm. And so he came in, and so we got the swiftness of a leopard. A leopard is swift. And he, you know, a leopard goes in and does its thing, and then, you know, and that's how Alexander the Great was. He came in and he conquered, and then he got bored because he didn't have any more lands to conquer, and then he died. So, but those areas, he were kind of divided up, of his lands that he had conquered were divided up by the four generals. And so that's represented here by the four wings of a bird on its back. All right. And it says the beast had four heads, and of course the four heads are the generals, referring to the generals again. And dominion was given to it, meaning that we have now changed from the Persian Empire now to the Greek Empire. And the fourth beast, so we're coming up on the fourth beast. So what comes after Greece, after the Greek Empire? We already know the Roman Empire.
The Romans, yeah.
Yeah, the Romans came next. So after this, I saw in the night vision, and behold, a fourth beast, terrifying and dreadful and exceedingly strong. It had great iron teeth. So, you know, if the legs were made of iron in the statue of King Nebuchadnezzar, then that represented Rome, and so the iron teeth are also representing Rome. And it devoured and broke in pieces and stamped with what was left with its feet. In other words, total destruction, ruling basically with an iron fist. This kingdom is different than the rest. I mean, it's a terrifying beast. It's not even reference to what this beast is, because it's a terrible,
absolutely dominant,
very much so, and did not have any tolerance for other ideas, if you will. It was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. Okay, now, okay, so they remember the statue from the legs of iron, and then the feet, mm-hmm. And the toes.
Iron mixed with clay, and you mentioned the 10 toes, and the idea is that iron mixed with clay is fragile compared to unadulterated iron. Yeah.
Right. So this is a reference kind of to the same thing. We know, for example, that the first part, we know that Rome obviously came, but who conquered Rome? No one. Right? There was no conquering of Rome. Rome just dissolved because of immorality and all kinds of stuff, infighting.
They dissolved internally first and made themselves vulnerable. Yes.
Right. But there is going to be a second Rome rising up, at least a government that has the same characteristics as this Roman government did. And so it won't, you know, care about anybody else's opinion either. And it will be a fierce and rule kind of with a iron rod, if you will. And there won't be any dissension, because if you dissent, okay, we'll just kill you. You know, we just stomp you under our feet. And that's what this kingdom, that's in the, of course, the 10 horns, you know, represent the 10 kings in the latter days, which I believe we're rapidly approaching. And it says,
so you're saying that gets into our era, that we are the logical extension of Rome.
Yes. Right. And, you know, having a parliament or having a Congress, if you will, a people's representative government, and a democracy, if you will, there's going to be aspects of that in this kingdom, this world. Again, it's a world kingdom. Now, this is going to be worldwide as opposed to just, you know, the Europe and the Fertile Crescent.
Are we describing a loose federation? Is that what we're saying?
It's going to be a loose federation. Yes. And one that can crumble at any minute until something else happens. And we're about ready to consider what that something else is. And I considered the horns, and behold, there came up from among them another horn, a little one, before which three of the first horns were plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things. This is why... You know, I like Daniel so much is because it is descriptive. It is cryptic, as I'll get out, right? Mm-hmm. It is cryptic. But once you decipher it, it tells you a whole lot. It tells you about the characteristic of this guy. So this little horn, another kingdom, another ruler, if you will, king, comes up. So there's 10 kings. Another ruler comes up, and he somehow kills or does away with three of the previous kings. And then, you know, he's got this great ability to speak great things. Very puffed up, very egotistical, people are going to like him. Very charismatic. He's going to be very charismatic. That's how he rises to power so quickly.
I have a question for you. Now, you posited at the beginning that the book of Daniel contains the entire history of the Gentiles from the time of Babylon up to the present day.
And beyond.
Well, and beyond. Where is Israel in this? They seem to be a minor player all of a sudden, and historically they have been in a lot of ways, except for Jesus.
Yes.
I mean, the politics of Israel, I mean, they were a small place. They were located in a very key location geographically that had a lot to do with all these other kingdoms. That's why they were constantly being overrun. But that seems, at least as far as Daniel is concerned, the nation of Israel is relatively insignificant.
Well, in these visions, yes, until we get to chapter 9.
Ah, okay.
Chapter 9 lays it all out as to what happens to Israel. And so you'll have to wait until then for that answer. Until then, we're going to talk about the Gentiles and the Gentile kingdom.
The cliffhanger, eh? All right.
So, yes. So this man that has a mouth speaking great things, he's going to be boastful, very prideful. He is the Antichrist that we learn about in Revelation. And as I looked, thrones were placed, and the Ancient of Days took his seat. Aha. Uh-huh. So who's the Ancient of Days?
The Ancient of Days would be Jesus.
It's actually God the Father.
God the Father.
The Ancient
okay.
of Days
okay.
is God the Father. And he took his seat, so it took his throne. His clothes were white as snow. And I mean, this, if you kind of read chapter 5 of Revelation, it almost sounds exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
His hair, you know, it, like pure wool. His throne was fiery flames, and its wheels were burning fire.
Do you suppose that John borrowed liberally from Daniel in putting Revelation together?
Well, he knew Daniel for sure. And
well, he was Jewish to the core, but he's describing his own vision in Revelation.
And he's seeing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, God downloaded the throne room to Daniel here, and John sees the same thing in his vision. That's why, you know, the appearance is so similar. They're both, God allowed both of them. And it's interesting, both Daniel and John are called beloved.
Hmm.
And so God's beloved, he does a core dump on, you know, the future and what's going to happen, interestingly enough, and allows them a vision of the throne room. And so the fire really refers to judgment, as in Revelation chapter 20, for example. And it says thrones were placed. And this is kind of a reference to the same 24 elders and the 24 thrones that are in Revelation 1 and Revelation chapter 4. So Daniel is getting a little picture there. Now, the 24 thrones weren't, you know, the people weren't necessarily there yet. And so he's seeing into, of course, seeing into the future with this vision.
So chapter, verse 11, he speaks about what happens to the Antichrist, correct?
Yes. And let's see, verse 11 says, "And I looked, then, because of the sound of the great words that the horn was speaking, and as I looked, the beast was killed, and its body destroyed, and given over to be burned with fire." So what happens to the Antichrist? What happens to the false prophet, if you will? Not the false prophet, but the first beast. He gets, when Jesus returns, he actually gets bound up for 1,000 years, and he can't do any more harm. Well, Satan gets bound for 1,000 years, but the beast is thrown into the lake of fire. And so this is a reference to
burned with fire. Now, yeah. Just to repeat a little bit, back in this is verse 8, "And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things." That says that the tenth horn was not a kingdom, but a person, an individual, correct?
It is an individual. It's referring to the king, the mm-hmm. king of the whole world
mm-hmm.
At that time, or as yet to come. And so, yes, he has, and it's the same personage that in Revelation he has the mortal wound, and the wound is healed, and he miraculously comes back to life again. Mm-hmm. And I believe when he comes back to life, he's actually indwelled by Satan himself. Mm-hmm. And that's when all hell breaks loose on earth.
Well, I warned everybody, it's getting good here. We're past the lion's den and the furnace and into prophecy that pertains to us right now. And it's fascinating stuff. Dr. Don, a member of the board of Creation Moments, I want to mention their website to you, creationmoments.com. There you'll find a lot of scientific information archived, available in various forms that support and explain and teach the biblical story of creation. We recommend that to you, creationmoments.com. Don, we thank you again for more. We're looking forward to next week. I don't know how many parts we're going to have here, but we're eating that stuff up. It's good information. Appreciate it.
All right. Very good. Well, we'll at least get through Daniel chapter 9.
You have a great week. We'll see you.
All right. Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.